Former White House National Security Advisor Michael Flynn today entered a federal courtroom and pled guilty to lying to the FBI about his conversations with the Russian ambassador about Obama-era sanctions just before the inauguration last year. And Flynn has agreed to cooperate with FBI Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation of Russian election interference and possible Trump collusion with it.
And then there are the tax cuts.
Right.
So let's get right to it with our Friday roundtable. Rick Klein, ABC News political director. Hi, Rick.
Hey, great to be with you.
And Maria Elena Salinas, Univision News anchor. Hi, Maria Elena.
Hello. Good to talk to you.
And Rick, I want to start with you because your colleague at ABC News, Brian Ross, is reporting that Michael Flynn is prepared to testify that President Trump directed him to make contact with the Russians. Tell us more about what we know there.
This is a game changer, and it leads Director Mueller's probe to the doors of the Oval Office itself. We have previously known about Russian contacts between Trump associates and aides and officials. And of course, the guilty plea today is Michael Flynn saying that he was, in fact, in touch with the Russian ambassador, which we knew. But if Flynn is going to tell Mueller and the special counsel's office that he was told by Trump to make contact with the Russians, that has a potential, opens up a whole door to a new level of complications and legal liabilities for this White House.
Well, let's remember, because people can be forgiven for forgetting with everything that's going on. Michael Flynn served in Iraq and Afghanistan, then in the Obama administration. He was pushed out. The Obama administration says they warned Trump about him. He led the locker up chants on the trail. His son Michael fueled conspiracy theories online. He resigned the Trump administration after just 24 days when it was revealed he'd misled the vice president about his contacts with the Russian ambassador. He also failed to disclose money he received from Russia-linked companies and the Turkish government. He only recently registered as a foreign agent. And we remember President Trump asked then FBI Director James Comey before firing to stop investigating Flynn. Maria Elena, hasn't this smelled for a while?
Yes. And, you know, now it really seems clear that lying to the vice president was just an excuse to get rid of him. They had to find a way to get rid of him. You know, now there's two people admitting that they lied, you know, to the FBI, Papadopoulos and Flynn.
And
you
mentioned Papadopoulos. You should remind people again, it's so hard to keep track, but he was sort of the more low-level campaign aide who, in that famous now photograph with Sessions and Trump at a table, offered to set up meetings with the Russians.
Yeah, and it gets a little delicate because we remember that picture, that the famous picture where Trump was there with Papadopoulos and Kelly, and they all say they don't remember. And Sessions was there, and he said he doesn't remember. So, you know, it seems that now is maybe the time where Trump needs to begin to worry. Now that it was reported that Flynn's lawyers stopped communicating with White House lawyers, you know, it makes you wonder if there was a plea deal. And it seems by what Rick Klein is reporting that there was some kind of a plea deal where Flynn will spill the beans. So, you know, what we're seeing here is a pattern from the president that when you are in a sticky situation, you just deny it. You pretend it didn't happen. You know, he doesn't admit to anything about Russia contacts, just like he doesn't admit to any of the sexual harassment allegations against him.
So, Rick, where does this go now?
The question of what story Michael Flynn has to tell becomes critical now, because his lawyer has said in the past that he has quite a story to tell. And I think how close it gets to the president, what Mueller learns from this, I think for a lot of people, they look at the guilty plea today and say it was very narrow. So it suggested that he brought a lot to that table. I feel like now the investigation goes into hyperdrive, and anyone who was hoping for it to wind down is seeing that it's really closer to the beginning than the end.
All right. A lot more going on in Washington today, and I want to talk about tax cuts. We may get a vote today. Maria Elena Salinas, as you watch this, what do you think? Is the Republican tax cut plan going to be able to pass?
Yeah, it's interesting how there could be such a different point of view on this tax plan. You know, sort of like, is the glass half full or the glass half empty? You know, but aside from who will benefit and who will be hurt by this, it's definitely more about the politics of it. And I think that's what's on their mind. You know, before positions on immigration, abortion, same-sex marriage, the flag, Confederate status, before all that defined the difference between Democrats and Republicans, it was taxes. So now, leading up to the midterms, you know, this vote can determine the political future of members of Congress. And the stakes for Trump are even higher. You know, he's had a tough time getting his agenda through, and now he's realizing that you can't make promises that you can't keep if you don't have control over
them. Well, Rick Klein, it is also a matter of math, isn't it? And we had the report come out late yesterday afternoon, a bipartisan committee on taxation report saying that actually the Republican tax plan would raise the deficit by more than $1 trillion. And, you know, you take different elements of the plan that we're being told we're actually going to, you know, reduce the deficit or to make people's lives better. And now people are suddenly looking back. We're reading in the Boston Globe today about, for instance, take one piece, the move to cut corporate taxes to encourage corporations to bring back profits they've stashed overseas to avoid the taxes. It's been tried before. There was George Bush's tax holiday in 2004 when over $2 trillion was overseas. But a 2010 study showed only $300 billion came back. 92% of that went right into stocks and dividends, even though that wasn't supposed to be allowed in the law. Historically, this hasn't worked. Is there a sense that a lot of what's been sold in these plans is falling apart?
This is a monumental gamble by the Republican Party. We don't know much of the analysis about it, and tax law is so complicated. It has such huge implications. It takes years, sometimes decades, to understand what things mean, and they are literally making laws on the fly or making policy changes on the fly. And I think that their big gamble here is that this is going to provide, as President Trump says, rocket fuel to the economy, that the middle-class taxpayers will see a big benefit. We know for a fact that the deficit is going to take a big hit. We know for a fact that the economy is doing very well right now without this tax cut. And we know for a fact that most of the benefits are going to go to wealthy people. So this is a tough political battle and an economic gamble as well. And I don't know that Republicans are quite grasping that, because what's overtaken them is the overriding sense that they just need to pass something.
Well, in fact, some on the left, the economists, are refusing to call it a tax cut plan. They're calling it a wealth transfer, because they just it feels, and, you know, we'll see when the vote comes, but as if there's been sort of a curtain parting, as in The Wizard of Oz, and people are taking a closer look now. But anyway, the tax plan, do we know who's on board, who's not? They've been jockeying all day.
Yeah, and we just got word from Senator Jeff Flake that he is on board. It does appear like they have enough votes to pass this at this stage, because some of the people that are most worried about the impacts on the deficit have come on board. Mitch McConnell says he has the votes, and they're hurtling toward a final passage in the Senate.
But there may be some Republicans that that vote against it. We're going to have to see what happens there. Maria Elena, jump in.
Right, and we... Yeah. And we have no idea exactly what that tax plan is going to look like, because they've made so many changes to it to try to convince those that were not on board that we have no idea what the outcome is going to come and what it's going to look like and what concessions they made.
All right. One more story that we have to get to this week, which is the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, and these reports that he's basically being pushed out could be very soon. Rick, what's going on there, and are we going to have a new Secretary of State by the end of the year?
I think by the beginning of next year at the earliest. It seems like the writing is on the wall. The message delivered in the pages of the New York Times and other media outlets that the president has this secession plan in place. On one level, not really a surprise. Rex Tillerson, his frustrations have been fairly well publicly documented. But I think the flip side of that is you're talking about someone in Mike Pompeo potentially replacing him, if confirmed by the Senate, who has little experience in this realm and I think would be seen as much closer to the White House. And I think you'd be drawing a lot of the policy inside the White House.
Well, Tillerson had no experience. I mean, it was the first time ever that a head of the State Department had absolutely no experience. And what is the big problem? Because if you look at what he's doing, he's been spending a lot of time reportedly just stripping the State Department, taking it apart, firing people, not filling roles. He is reducing it. Isn't that what the Trump administration wanted?
Well, yes and no. Partly yes, but I think they're also finding complications in trying to get basic things done.
And Maria Elena?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that, you know, this public shaming of someone that he seems to be doing that often when he doesn't like them. You know, he put people in these places, in these positions, even if they had no experience, because of loyalty, because he thought that they would be loyal to him and that they would support him in whatever he said. When he realizes that he's not getting that support, then he's got to push him out one way or another and bring in someone else who thinks that will be loyal to him.
But
so he's definitely
was the one who chose
himself.
Them, as you
right.
Look,
out.
Actually, Rick, Maria, Elena pointed to, there's something a little off here. And you write, this isn't normal. You're referring to, it's a week where a president retweeted a far-right British hate group's anti-Muslim videos, got in a fight with our biggest ally, referred to a senator as Pocahontas in front of Native Americans, reportedly is returning to birtherism, privately questioning Obama's citizenship, saying that wasn't his voice on a tape, in which he already said it was. It isn't normal, but does it get worse? We only got about a minute.
Well, I think one concern is that you can see now maybe why the president was concerned and lashing out, that he knew that the Michael Flynn news was coming down and how bad that would be. But I think it's easy to lose perspective because President Trump is realigning the stars almost every day. What he is doing is not normal and shouldn't just be widely accepted because he's doing it.
Just a few seconds, Maria Elena. Go for it.
Yeah, I think that what we need to look at here is usually he sticks to one or two topics when he tweets, and he keeps those the whole week. This time he was all over the place tweeting with so many different things. So we have to wonder, is that a way to sort of like distract the attention away from the problems that he knows are coming, or does he really mean what he's tweeting? You know, this isn't funny anymore.
Maria Elena Salinas, Univision News anchor, Rick Klein, ABC News political director. Thank you both on this already tumultuous Friday. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.